Greetings, everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour, an editorial review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on natural remedies when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000, you're paying about $7,650 a year in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed, paying that 15.3% rate. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract the $7,650 that you just paid on your Social Security taxes from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance? Instead of paying 17% of the whole $50,000 twice. Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security taxes once, and then they make you pay 17% of the same $50,000 in income tax twice. Now, that means that you're paying 17% of that $7,650 Social Security tax twice. Now, that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that was kind of special. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status and what you can do about that bookkeeping trick, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Remember that number, 417-273-4967. Now, Tax and Status, the school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, this week we're reviewing a book called The Natural Remedies Encyclopedia. It's a pretty big, heavy-duty, thick book. I don't know what the price is. I imagine it's $40-$50. It ought to be $40 or $50, but it's worth 10 times that. It's worth 10 times that because it has the natural remedies that mankind has been using for thousands of years. Before doctors came on the scene about 1900 here in America, there were people who had malaria or cholera or bubonic plague, or they would get some other infectious disease, pneumonia or something like that. And before doctors, people had to deal with that. And surprisingly, they dealt pretty effectively with it. Now, it is true that modern medicine does have some neat tricks up their sleeves. For instance, the ER, when you get shot 3 times with a .45 in the chest, the ER is a pretty good place to take the patient, and a lot of times they'll save them. And bad automobile wrecks and accidents, you know, medevacs and area code or 911, you know, the telephone number 911. Penicillin, antibiotics. There are a lot of neat tricks up the doctor's sleeves. But one of the big, heavy-duty drawbacks to allopathic medicine is that it's a business, primarily. It's a business. And these doctors are entrepreneurs. And the way they make their money is from sickness and disease, not from health. If the doctor was getting paid to keep you healthy, you probably would get sick less often. But doctors in America, unlike the Chinese, who practice a health system rather than a medicine system, doctors in America get paid based upon sickness. And the more sickness there is, the more money there is to be made. For instance, if I could If I could show you how to prevent cancer so that you could live your entire lifetime and never get cancer, and if you followed that modality, if you followed that procedure and you lived your whole life and never got cancer, then the cancer doctors, the oncologists, would starve to death. I mean, if everybody did that, they'd starve to death. So I wouldn't go so far as to say that doctors promote disease and hide causes so that you'll come down with cancer. I suspect that's got some merit to it, but I won't make that allegation. And because I want to be a nice guy, I'm going to go so far as to say that if the doctors knew what caused cancer, they'd probably tell you. Now, they say that they don't know what causes cancer. And I'm going to take them at their word. I don't think that all doctors are ignorant. I think that some doctors know what causes cancer. Because in this encyclopedia, they tell you what causes cancer. For instance, you know that smoking increases your risk of cancer, don't you? Now, my grandmother smoked for, 70 years, I'd say. She died at age 88, and she smoked since she was 16 or 18. She smoked a pack of Camel Studs every day of her life. Camel Studs. And she died at age 88. But she didn't die from cancer. She died from stroke. She had a stroke, and then she quit smoking for 3 years, and then she finally expired. Now, we also know that smoking is associated with heart disease and stroke and atherosclerosis and arterial sclerosis. And here in this encyclopedia, at the end of every article, or nearly every article, they'll tell you, don't drink, don't smoke, don't drink coffee, get plenty of rest, eat lots of fruits and vegetables, and so on. They tell you that because those are just the basics of good, healthy living. And, of course, not everybody wants to live a good, healthy life. We all want good health. We don't want to live a lifestyle that promotes or that guarantees or that would produce good health. We want to smoke, but we don't want lung cancer. We want to drink, but we don't want cirrhosis of the liver. And we want to live a hedonistic lifestyle of sodomy and whores and whorehouses, but we don't want venereal disease and God forbid, we don't want AIDS. In short, we want to break all of the natural laws. We want to poke at ourselves all of the pleasures, all of the excitements of life. But we don't want any of the side effects. We want to take drugs, but we don't want any side effects. Unfortunately, out here in the real world, you can't have it both ways. I mean, that's just where reality's at. Now, if you're like I was when I was a youngster, see, when you're 17, 18, 19 years old, you have eternal life. Eternal life. No kid 17 years old can visualize himself dying. Now, when you get to be 60, 70, 80 years old, you can see that you're mortal, that you are, in fact, approaching the end of your life. Health isn't important when you're 17. Health is important when you're 55 or 60. Now, when you get to be 65, you're going to find that you have some disabilities. Whether you like it or not, that's what old age produces. You'll find that, for instance, as I wiggle my left thumb here, I have a little bit of pain in there. A little bit of pain. I would imagine that's probably caused by arthritis or rheumatism in that joint. In that joint. Now, I didn't have that when I was 17, but I've got it now. And it's not disabling, and it's not life-threatening, but I notice it. I can notice it. It's not bad, and I'm trying my best to stay away from bad food, and I do my best to eat good food, and I'm trying to prolong my life and give myself the best possible life and lifestyle for the balance of my time, about another 10 years, they tell me, statistically. Now, That being the case, as you listen to me today, you say to yourself, you older people, well, maybe this guy's got something that can help me with my rheumatism and arthritis. Or maybe you've got a child with autism. I covered that last time. Maybe there's something you could do with that child with autism if you put your mind to it. But the medical doctors tell you plainly, we don't know. We don't know. See, if the doctor could cure the autism, and I mentioned this yesterday, and I'm going to mention it once more. If the doctor said, gee, let's put this child on chelation, and let's get all of the mercury and aluminum and heavy metals out of this child's body. Let's stop giving this child any further vaccinations. I think we've done quite enough already. Then let's give massive vitamins, minerals, and foodstuffs to this child. And let's see if we can rebuild these neuroconnectors in this child's body. And this has been experimented with, and some results have been noted in alternative therapies. Conventional therapies don't help you much. They treat the disease, they don't cure it. Diabetics take insulin. Doesn't cure the disease, but it treats the symptom. But when we take a look at diabetes, there are cases where diabetes has been reversed. People who have been diabetic have rebuilt their pancreas, and it now produces insulin, and they're off of insulin. They're no longer on the treatment. Their bodies work normally. If that can be done in some cases, why can't it be done in more cases? Now, I got to tell you a little story here. I had a guy one time with cancer. His wife, and this guy and his wife came over. And they said, well, Bob here has cancer, and he's going to die shortly. And he didn't look like he had cancer. He was an electrician. He was very healthy looking and robust. He was still working. And I pointed out to him, I said, well, it's relatively easy for you to overcome this cancer because your body energy is so high. I had an old naturopath tell me, he says, as long as the body energy is around 15% or more, we can reverse out all of these metabolic diseases. But if your body energy drops below 15%, he said, then you don't have enough energy in your body to live and overcome the cancer, overcome the heart disease, overcome the diabetes. So one of the things that causes this debilitation of your body's energy is chemotherapy, these drugs that they give you, because it attacks your immune system, and it's your immune system that heals disease. All disease is overcome and healed by your immune system. And the only thing the doctor can do by giving you penicillin is to kill a lot of bacteria in your body to give your immune system a jump start so that it can overcome the bacteria or the virus that's in your body. Your immune system was designed by God, your creator, to overcome all of the diseases that we're reading about in this book, 730 of them that have been categorized and listed and articles written, you know, articles like rabies or hydrophobia. What causes that? Where does it come from? Is it a virus? Is it a bacteria? Is it a poison? What causes rabies? If we could figure out what the cause of it is, then we could avoid it. Now, dog bite is one of the causes by a rabid dog of rabies. Well, obviously, let's avoid getting bitten by a rabid dog. Well, number one, nobody goes out to get bit by a dog or anything else. It just happens. And then when it happens, what are we going to do? Well, most people would rush off to the doctor and get a tetanus shot. You rush off to the doctor and say, well, God, I got to have a vaccination. What if you don't have a doctor available? What if, for some reason, you're in Nigeria, you're in Africa, you're in South America, and something happens? You know, what are you going to do? Now, with snake bite, there's an interesting observation that's been made. If there's an electrical shock given to the bite area, it will neutralize the toxin. So let me pass this one on. Let's suppose you're out here and a cobra bites you, and if you're close by the hospital, you rush to the hospital, you say, Doc, I've been bit by a snake, like my boy Dirk, you know, I've been bit by a snake. And he rushes you in and he gives you this anti-venom and it solves your problem. Now, missionaries have found that when they're out in the bush in Africa or South America and there's no doctors, hospitals, and ERs and anti-snake venom and so on, they have to come up with another solution. So what they do is they go over to their car and they take a wire off the spark plug. And they start the car, and then they put the spark plug, the wire, right next to the bite. And the spark jumps on there, and I imagine it must hurt like hell. I've been shocked a couple of times, you know, messing around with my car, you know. And it kind of bites you, but it neutralizes that poison. So if you didn't know that little trick, well, now you know a little trick that you didn't know before. That's called a natural remedy. A natural remedy. It's something that's not invasive, and it's something that traditional people knew about or know about and have been using for a long time, but it doesn't make any money. I mean, picture this. You get bit by a snake, and you say, gee, I don't think I'll waste my time, effort, energy, or money calling 911, getting medevac to the hospital, and going through the process. I think I'll just walk over to the car and take the spark plug wire off and go zap. That takes care of the poison. It neutralizes the poison. It does something to the chemical structure of the protein poison and renders it harmless. And it doesn't cost anything. Can you see that the doctors can't make any money that way? See, doctors don't make money by telling you how to do something that doesn't cost anything, doesn't take any special technology. Same thing applies to cancer and all these other various and sundry diseases. Now, the reason they like these vaccines and the reason that we went from two vaccines back in the 1940s to 35 today is that each one of these vaccines is $25 each. So let's just run this off here for a minute. Back when I was a kid, you went to the doctor and you got a shot and it was $5. And so when I was a kid, $10 would take care of you for life. Two vaccinations. Today, you got 35 times 25. That's $875 for every kid in America. Let's see, there's 47 million times 47 million. Well, that drops off the radar screen on my little calculator here. So let's take 47 times 875 or 870 or so. You get $40,890. I think that's $40,890,000,000. Now, that's a lot of bread. You know, that's a lot of money. And that's what doctors are in business for. Like lawyers, professionals in general, are entrepreneurs. And they make their money based upon a problem. A lawyer makes his money based upon trouble. A doctor makes his money based upon sickness and disease. Now, that's good for doctors and it's good for lawyers, but you and I are the guys that have to pay these doctors and lawyers and support them in the lifestyles to which they would like to become accustomed. Now, if you'd like to keep more money in your own pocket, then you need to take your medical, your health into your own hands and become medically competent and take care of yourself. So I know it's a wild new concept over here, but as I said yesterday as we were dealing with autism, doctors don't have any incentive to cure your child of autism, because as long as the child is autistic, the child needs medical services, Medicare, and needs attention. Now, if this child were cured, I mean, you know, a child that doesn't have autism doesn't make any money. A child with autism makes doctors and social workers and bureaucrats and politicians a lot of money. You know, if that child were to be healed, that child it shuts off the money tree. Now, that's the way the game is played, so let's just pay attention to reality. All right, now let's take up infectious disease. Remember I said to you that the cause of disease is twofold. There's just two things that cause disease or cause your disorder, and that is you're poisoned or you're starving to death. And right away, I knew I could get the vibrations through the radio here. I knew that you were going to say, but what about infectious diseases? What about viral infections like flu? And what about bacterial infections, you know, like malaria or smallpox or bubonic plague? Right? There's an interesting story that we should start off with here. Years ago, when people went to the hospital, primarily pregnant women, to have babies, the doctor would come in and he would touch this pregnant woman or this woman that just had a baby, and then she would get some infectious disease like malaria or typhoid or smallpox or something. And it was, you know, it was a big problem. And it really cut into the bottom line of the hospitals because people got to saying, Jesus, you know, half the people that go to the hospital to have a baby end up getting smallpox or typhoid or malaria or some other infectious disease, yellow fever or something. And it was traced back. They got to looking at it, and they got to thinking about it, and they said, you know, the doctor goes in, and he touches this guy that's got, smallpox. And he comes over, and he touches this woman who's in here with a pregnancy, and she gets smallpox. And they said, gee, I wonder if the doctor is the carrier of the smallpox from this guy who's down the hall three doors over to this woman who doesn't have smallpox but who's having a baby. And sure enough, they figured out that doctors weren't washing their hands. And so this doctor woke up one day and he says, you know, I think if we washed our hands, I mean, each time that we touch a patient, we go wash our hands. And then we go touch another patient and we go wash our hands. And so they tested that. And sure enough, they discovered that if the doctor would wash his hands every time that he touched a patient, then they wouldn't spread these diseases throughout the hospital. These are contagious diseases. And that was a major breakthrough. Today, doctors, you know, when they go into surgery, they go through this. It's kind of like a ceremony, you know. They go in and wash their hands. They call it scrubbing. And they go in and they scrub and disinfect and one thing and another, and they go into surgery. It's kind of like a religious rite, you know, like taking bread and wine, and only doctors, you know, they have their sacrifices, you know, and their altar is on the operating table, and they have these things they go through, you know, ceremonies. And they're kind of like priests. And it's kind of a religion. It's like having a religious experience. But this religion, this doctor religion over here, they found out that they could stop the spread of infectious disease. Now, what does that have to do with the cause of sickness? Well, watch this. They discovered that about half the patients that they touched got diseased. For instance, what they would find is this. Here's a doctor. He goes over and he touches this patient who's just died from smallpox. He comes over and he touches some pregnant women, you know. And out of the pregnant women that he's touching over here, after he's been infected with the smallpox, he finds that half the women come down with smallpox and half of them don't. Now, all of them have been exposed to smallpox, but only half of them get it. Why don't all of them get it? After all, they've all been exposed. Now, let's try this one. Let's suppose you go to a party, and at the party, there's a fellow in there who has the flu. And he's coughing and sneezing and hooping and hollering and wheezing and whining. And sure enough, after the party's over, a week later, you get to talking with some other people. And say, oh, Bob came and he had the flu, and I got the flu from Bob. And Sally and Tom and Dick and Harry and Gene, they all got the flu. Yeah, but here's the bright spot. He had contact with everybody at the party, but only 10 or 15 people in the party, only half the people at the party actually contracted the flu. Why didn't 100% of them contract the flu? Because 100% of them were exposed. Typhoid Mary was a case in point. Typhoid Mary was spreading typhoid fever. Now, she didn't do it intentionally, and she said herself that she had never had typhoid. And only people that have had typhoid could spread typhoid to somebody else. And she said, geez, you know, I'm a grown woman and I've never had typhoid and I cannot be the vehicle by which it's being spread. And it was a tragic case, Typhoid Mary, because here's a woman that was healthy, but she had typhoid fever, but she didn't display the symptoms, and she was a carrier of it, but not a victim of it. Carrier but not a victim, and she was spreading it to others. But listen, Typhoid Mary came in contact with lots of people, but not everybody that she came into contact with got typhoid fever, but some people did. And what they discovered was that everybody that got typhoid fever had had contact with Typhoid Mary, but not everybody that came into contact with Typhoid Mary got typhoid fever. Can you follow that? you know, all Californians are Americans, but not all Americans are Californians. And not everybody that came into contact with Typhoid Mary got typhoid. Why not? Because some people did. And it has to do with your immune system. Immune system. So I'm going to turn over here to page 239 and show you a very important little trick here on page 239 of the book Natural Remedies Encyclopedia, and show you something here about your immune system. Years ago, they used to take out your tonsils, adenoids, and appendix because they called them vestigial organs. Now, if you believe in evolution, it makes all the sense in the world, because you see, nobody could figure out what in the world your tonsils and adenoids did. And they said, well, there probably was a time when you needed to evolve tonsils, but now that time has passed and the tonsils have served their purpose and we don't need them anymore, and so we're evolving to be bigger and better and neater species, and so we can just cut those out. Now, on the other hand, the other theory is that we're designed and made by God. There's a master designer. And just because you bought a new Ford car and you open the hood and you look and there's a thingy in there and you say, well, I can't for the life of me figure out what that thingy is doing in there, so I think I'll just reach in there and take it out and throw it away. Hell, your car might even run if you took that thingy out and threw it away. You know, you could take a headlight out and throw it away, the car'd run fine. But the reason the car has two headlights and it has two taillights and it's got, you know, the one carburetor and it's got an air cleaner on the carburetor, the car won't run without the carburetor, but the car will run without the air cleaner that's on the carburetor. But that doesn't mean that the air cleaner that's on top of the carburetor is a vestigial organ that doesn't have any purpose. The engineer that designs the car says, look, this car will last longer if we filter the dirt out of the air before it goes into the pistons and valves and into the engine. And if it's sucking up a lot of grime and dust and dirt and dust particles, it causes more wear and the car doesn't last as long. Doesn't mean the car won't start. Doesn't mean the car won't run. Now, people have their tonsils taken out and those people live their lives. You know, they don't die because they have their tonsils taken out. I happen to have my tonsils and adenoids, but it's a miracle. See, I was raised back in the 30s and 40s. And let me tell you, boys and girls, everybody had their tonsils and adenoids taken out, whether they were sore or whether they needed to be taken out or not. It's like vaccinations today. During that period of time in American history, every kid had his tonsils taken out. And I remember having conversations with other kids, and they were wearing, you know, something around their neck, and they'd just gotten out of the hospital, and they had their tonsils out, and boy, it was really sore, and it was really bad, and I used to marvel. My granny thought that if God and didn't want you with tonsils, he wouldn't have made you with tonsils. If God had decided that you needed vaccinations, he'd have designed you with a needle sticking out of your arm. So you just hook the hypodermic up to the needle and shoot it up, see? So my granny was an old-timey lady. And as these old-timey ladies, they believed in God. They thought that there was a designer, that there was intelligent design behind the human body. So if you believe that, then you have to believe that, gee, when God designed your tonsils and adenoids, did he have a reason for doing that? Well, in the 30s and 40s, we couldn't figure it out, but in the 70s and 80s, we got a little smarter, and we found out that the tonsils are a part of what's known as your immune system. And your immune system is made up of lymph nodes and lymph glands and thyroid and appendix, and adenoids and tonsils, and that there's a system that runs through your body. And in your throat, these tonsils catch germs and bacteria and viruses right out of the chute. I mean, as soon as you inhale, say, I just inhaled, and I sucked in a bunch of germs that are floating around in the air, and my tonsils and adenoids are going to be the first filter, and they're going to attack and they're going to destroy those before they cause any damage. And so here's the bottom line to your immune system. Your immune system is a part of an integrated body, your body. It all works together, just like an automobile. The whole thing works together. The headlights work with the air cleaner and with the taillights and turn signals to make a whole unit work perfectly. And just because you can knock out a taillight or just, you know, throw the air cleaner away and take the headlight off, doesn't mean that the body's going to die, but it means it's not going to run near as well. It's not going to look as good. It's not going to run as good. It's not going to last as long. So if you've had your tonsils taken out, you have destroyed a part of your immune system. And you're not going to live as long. You're not going to live as well. You're going to suffer from allergies, and you're going to suffer from more of these diseases because you've destroyed. You know, you took out your headlight. You're not going to be able to see as well. Doesn't mean that you can't see at all. It just means that you can't see as well. If you took out all of the lights on your car, you wouldn't be able to drive at night unless it was a full moon. And, you know, your car is better, and it runs better, and it's more serviceable and does more things if you have both headlights. If you have one headlight, you can get by, but if you have no headlights, you can still run it in the daytime, but, you know, nighttime operation is severely restricted. And that's all that we're dealing with our bodies. And the more debilitated your body becomes, then the less serviceable it becomes. So if that's important to you, then listen up, because we'll be back with more on these infectious diseases when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call The Law School. The number to call, 417-273-4967, and we'll tell you more. That's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archive. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, economics, science, education, health, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse necessarily endorse or recommend the Law Hour or editorial review. And that's because most of the authors and the publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by us here at the Law Hour or editorial review, or vice versa. And keep in mind that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the opinions and the views of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, the webpage, or area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the immune system. Let me tell you a little something about this immune system from the Natural Remedies Encyclopedia, which, by the way, I'm going to give you their name and address over here. I recommend the book. Remember, I don't get paid for doing this. I review books and periodicals, and in the public interest, remember, to tell you something that you probably don't know or didn't know or couldn't find out, but now you know. And it's published by Harvest Time Books, one word, Harvest Time, H-A-R-V-E-S-T-I-M-E, Books. And they're located at Box 300, Altamont, A-L-T-A-M-O-N-T, Tennessee, 37301. The book is 840 pages long. It's a reference book. It's like the doctor's desk reference. published by Harvest Time Books, Box 300, Altamont, Tennessee, 37301. The authors, three of them, is Vance Ferrell, F-E-R-R-E-L-L, Vance Ferrell, accompanied by Edgar E. Archbold, M.D., and Harold M. Chern, M.D., so you got two medical doctors here. And they make reference to Dr. Christopher in here, and they also make reference to Ellen G. White and Seventh-day Adventist doctrine and theology and so on. So I need to warn all of you Catholics, Protestants, and Jews out there that I'm not advancing Seventh-day Adventist theology per se because I recommend this book. But I'm not knocking Seventh-day Adventist theology either, in case you're a Seventh-day Adventist, and I don't want to offend you either. But remember, we're nonpartisan and non-sectarian, but I can't help it if the guy that writes the book is partisan or sectarian. All right, so keep that in mind. And let's talk about this weakened immune system, because your body's immune system is the trick in good health. Now, if you maintain your immune system at 100% of efficiency, you'll live your life and never get sick a single time. And that's the way God designed it. Unfortunately, especially here in America, we like to impair our immune system. So when we drink alcoholic beverages to excess, not that you can't drink any at all, but to excess, it impairs your liver, and you come down with a disease called cirrhosis of the liver. All right. Now, you can do other things. You can eat fat, like McDonald's hamburgers. And I'm not opposed to McDonald's per se, so if you're running a McDonald's franchise, don't go call your lawyer and say, I'm going to sue that guy, Gordon, for running my business down. But Mr. McDonald's man, your hamburger that you buy from Swift & Company or your supplier has 30% fat in it. And human beings are not designed to digest fat very well, or very much of it. And so God, in Leviticus 3, verse 17, said, don't eat animal fat. Do not eat fat. But fat tastes real good. And over at the Wendy's people, they say, our hamburgers are hot and juicy. Well, they're not hot and juicy for no good purpose. They're hot and juicy because that fat, when it's heated up, melts and it becomes juicy. And when you put salt on fat, oh, God, it really tastes good. And because it tastes good, we want to eat more of it. So that's why we like French fries, because they taste good. And that's why we like hamburgers, because they taste good. Unfortunately, your body cannot handle that fat. Or at least not in the quantities that we Americans insist on stuffing our bodies. And so we get fat, we get obese, and we have heart attacks and strokes. We have atherosclerosis and arterial sclerosis. And we know what causes that. But we don't want to impact upon trade, commerce, business, and industry. So I come along and rain on your parade and tell you, well, the reason that you're obese is because you eat fat. You eat bad food. And it's not just alcohol, it's tobacco. And we all know that alcohol in excess is bad for us. And we all know that tobacco is bad for us and nicotine and so on. And we know that Flo's Whorehouse is bad for us, you know, and so on. But we do these things because they feel good, or they taste good, or they look good, or everybody else is doing it. And so we impact upon our health. Then you get to be an old fart like I am, and then you get this little sore joint here, and you say, oh my God, I wished I hadn't eaten quite as many Big Macs and Wendy's Hot and Juicies when I was 19 and had eternal life, until I found out when I was 35 or 40 that I didn't have as much eternal life as I thought I had. I used to tell people I used to fly airplanes. When I was a kid, I used to fly my airplanes under bridges and power lines. Remember, that was in the time, in that period when I had eternal life. When I got to be about 30, I recognized I might not have as much eternal life as I thought I have, so I started flying over the bridges and power lines. I got to be about 40, I said, oh my God, I'm pretty finite. So I stopped flying altogether as soon as I recognized and understood that the family that flies together dies together. An old proverb there. All right, so if I don't fly airplanes, I will not die in an airplane crash. So I can eliminate that hazard. If I don't drive an automobile, I will not die in an automobile accident. I can obviate that risk. Now, if I stop eating fat, I can obviate that heart attack and that stroke risk. If I stop smoking, I can obviate that risk and so on down the line. Now, pretty soon somebody says, yeah, but then you've impacted upon your lifestyle, and now there's nothing to live for. Who wants to live their lives in a padded cell twiddling their thumbs for 75 years? You know, we like to drive automobiles and fly airplanes and ride roller coasters and, you know, smoke Marlboros and drink a little Jack Daniels from time to time. It kind of adds a little spice to life. Well, as we do that, it adds a little more, and a little more to our immune system and the ability of our immune system to ward off disease. By the time a symptom develops, your immune system is already working at only half of its ability. So, if we can keep our immune system operating over the 50% level, we can maintain pretty good health. And we know that because not everybody who's exposed to bubonic plague gets bubonic plague. Let me give you another illustration of this when we deal with contagious disease. During the bubonic plague era of the 13th and 14th centuries, they noticed that when people got bubonic plague, it was almost 100% fatal, but it wasn't 100% fatal. It was only 90%. Only 90. 10% of people that got bubonic plague, 10% of them, survived it. So, we look at that and we say, gee, just because you get bubonic plague or pneumonic plague doesn't mean that it's 100% fatal. Some people actually survive it. Some people are actually surviving AIDS. Some people can actually survive Hunta fever and some of these others, you know, that are called 100%, you know, 100% fatal. They're not. No disease is 100% fatal. Here's another factor that comes in. They noticed that Jews didn't get bubonic plague at all. Let me repeat that. The Jews didn't get bubonic plague at all. So the people that were getting sick with bubonic plague looked over at the Jews who weren't getting sick from bubonic plague, and they said, these Jews are poisoning our water. We don't know what causes bubonic plague, but these Jews aren't getting it, so therefore the Jews must be poisoning us. And so there was a gigantic backlash against the Jews. I mean, they just really got ticked off at them. Now, instead of walking over to this Jewish guy and saying, gosh, you know, I'm an Englishman and I'm getting bubonic plague along with everybody else in my village, and you people aren't getting bubonic plague, could you tell us what it is that you people do that protects you from bubonic plague? No, that isn't human nature. You know, human beings are motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And when you're dying from bubonic plague and that Jew over there isn't dying from bubonic plague, we get real jealous real fast. Now, there's another factor that comes in here. Did you know that Mormons and Seventh-day Adventists, on average, live to be 77 years old, and the national average is only 75.5? Those two groups of people live 18 months longer, on average, than the rest of us do. Now, following the Middle Age formula, we should go out and kill all of or persecute all of the Mormons and Adventists because they live longer than the rest of the population. Therefore, they must be poisoning us. Can we look at Mormons and Adventists and come to an understanding of what is it that those people do or don't do that the rest of us do or shouldn't do that gives them that added 18 months on average, you know, average 18-month lifespan? And the answer is neither one of them drink. They shun alcohol. And they don't smoke, and they don't drink caffeine. All right, so they don't drink coffee, and they don't smoke, and they don't drink. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't drink, can't smoke, and can't drink a cup of coffee once in a while, but see, those people have a religious taboo. They don't do it at all. I'm sure that some of them do, and then some of them get added into the averages, and it probably cuts their averages down. But all I'm pointing out is that if you don't drink alcohol, if you don't smoke, and if you don't drink caffeine. Don't drink coffee. Don't drink soda pop. You're going to live 18 months longer, and you're going to do that not because you're a Mormon, not because you're an Adventist, but because that those three items there, that's the least common denominator that those two groups of people have in common that associates with lifespan. All right, so that being the case then, you say to yourself, well, I don't want to give up my Jim Beam, and I don't want to give up my Marlboros, but I will give up my Folgers. Okay, well, that's a step in the right direction, isn't it? Because your immune system is being attacked by these poisons. Caffeine, tobacco, and alcohol are poisons that go into your system. And it attacks that immune system. It plugs it up. It doesn't work as well. All right, now, normal people eat fat at McDonald's, and they drink, and they smoke, and they do all these things, and then they get breast cancer. And then we say, well, why do people get breast cancer? Well, because your immune system isn't working, lady. Your immune system isn't working. And so what do? They cut your breast off, and they cut your lymph system out from under your armpit. Your lymph system is plugged up. That's why you're getting breast cancer. If you could unplug your lymph system, then your immune system would dispose of the cancer oven by itself. And the reason we know that is because other people have done that. You see, not everybody who gets breast cancer goes and has their breasts cut off. There are some people who have gotten breast cancer, and they said, well, instead of cutting my breast off, let me try something else. Let me do a cleanse. Let me get the poisons out of my immune system. And let me see what happens. And they do that, and then the lump in their breast goes away. And then when you tell the medical doctor that, he says, well, yeah, that's right. 6% of the time, we have spontaneous remission. We don't know what does that. And I noticed that the thing that I've observed about allopathic medicine isn't so much what they know, it's what they don't know. For instance, you know, just going back, in the 1940s, they didn't know what your tonsils and your adenoids were for, so they cut them out. And then later on, they found out, oh, it's part of your immune system. And so now they still cut them out, but now they know what they're there for. Now, we know what your lymph system is for. It's a part of your immune system. Well, then why would you want to cut it out? Now, when people get cancer, they put them on chemotherapy. The chemotherapy depresses your immune system. Well, gosh, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you're already sick. You've already got cancer. And so now you're going to depress your immune system further? Hasn't it occurred to us yet that the reason you got cancer is because your immune system was depressed to start with? It was depressed by the fat that you were eating at McDonald's, and by the Jim Beam that you were drinking out of the liquor store, and by the Marlboros that you were smoking, you know, when you're lighting up, and by all the coffee that you're drinking, and soda pop that you're drinking, and CNH pure cane sugar that you're drinking with your soda pop at the rate of about 1 teaspoon per ounce. Has that occurred to you? Now, if you're going to go out here and imbibe in all of these excesses, and then when these symptoms come along, if you go out here and cut your breast off and your lymph system out, if you take chemotherapy, it's all over. So I'll tell you right now, from my personal observations, and I've been around for a while now, 66 years, been around watching people die for many, many years, here's my observation, that as soon as people go in to get chemotherapy, surgery, or radiation, they die. They die. Lance Armstrong is an exception to the rule. He was a viral, strong, healthy man who had a tumor in his brain, and they went and cut his tumor out, and his body was strong enough that it could overcome the chemotherapy that went along with it. Most people are already so depressed that they can't overcome the twin problems of the cancer, number one, and the chemotherapy, number two. Now, I have observed a few people, not very many. Remember I told you about the electrician? Well, let me finish that story. The electrician has good, strong body energy. But he was eating very poorly. He was eating a lot of fat, and his immune system became depressed. The immune system could not stay ahead of the cancer cells, so the cancer cells clumped together and formed a tumor, and the tumor was growing. And if he wanted to cure it, you either have to, one, cut it out. That works. Remember, 37% of the time, allopathic medicine just cuts the tumor out. What happens, though, when the tumor gets too big or the cancer spreads through your body? Now the doctor says, well, you should have came to me earlier, because now I can't cut all these cancers out. You got too much of it over too much of your body. Now, when that happens, and it happened to my wife back in 78, she had cancer all through her body. And the doctor said, well, if you'd have come here earlier, we could have cut it out. And so he proposed chemotherapy and radiation. And she said, will that cure me? He said, no, you're going to die anyway. Well, she said, what's this going to cost? He said, about $100,000. And she said, okay, well, I've got the $100,000, but if I give it to you, I'm going to live 18 months and my family is going to be impoverished. But if I don't do anything, I'm going to die in 6 months or less, and then my family will have the $100,000. And she thought, well, it would probably, the $100,000 would probably help her family more. So she elected to eliminate or to bypass the chemotherapy and the radiation. Surgery was out because it had already spread too far. So she got on the Ann Wigmore program. She stopped eating fat. She stopped eating protein. She stopped drinking. She stopped smoking. She stopped drinking coffee. She stopped eating white sugar and white death. She got off of unclean foods, you know, such things as lobster and crabs and pork and shellfish and so on. And she went on one of these alternative natural remedy programs. And in 2 years and 8 months, the cancer had totally vanished. And it's called spontaneous remission. She went back to her doctor and he said, we might have made a misdiagnosis. Maybe you didn't have cancer at all. Well, she was feeling real bad. And she went to the Zion Clinic and they said, yep, you've got cancer. She went to her oncologist and he said, yep, you've got cancer. So she had two opinions. It's just that the people at Zion, Illinois said, they were Adventists, by the way, and it was an Adventist clinic, and said, lady, you've got to get off of these unclean meats. And that's where this electrician was. See, this electrician says, I can't give up a diet, a lifestyle that I have been living for 42 years. This guy was only 42 years old. You know, when you're 19, 42 is an old man, but, you know, when you're 42, that's not quite as old as you thought it was when you were 19. And this guy was 42. Now, he lived about another year, year and a half, and he finally died of cancer. But he could not make the change. He could not strengthen his immune system. He could not use these natural remedies. So I just want to point out to you that very seldom do people adopt these natural remedies and cure their diseases, but if they did, and in every case that I have observed where people have stopped drinking and stopped eating unclean foods and stopped smoking and stopped drinking caffeine, stopped drinking soda pop, got the sugar out of their diets, got off the junk foods and started eating vegetables and juices, every single case that I've observed, they survived. So, you know, as an old man, 66 years old now, I look around and I say, look, boys and girls, let me tell you from my observations and from my experience. Everybody that I've observed that went to the medical doctor, got chemotherapy and radiation and operations, died. And I hear about the statistics and the literature tells me 37% survive it for 5 years. And on the other hand, I have 100% over here, and my wife, as I live with her every day, she's had cancer for 28 years. And she's a survivor. But she doesn't drink, and she doesn't smoke, and she doesn't eat white sugar, and she doesn't eat unclean foods, and she doesn't eat fat, and so on. And she was given 3 to 6 months to live. I mean, it was all through her body. She got on the Wigmore program, And the cancer just mysteriously, spontaneously went into remission, and she survived it. I don't think that it spontaneously went into remission. I think that her immune system was strengthened as soon as she stopped poisoning herself. And as her immune system strengthened, it could dispose of and destroy more cancer cells until finally her immune system, which was designed by God, it did not just miraculously appear out of nothing from no place, and it disposed of the cancer. Now that's what this book is all about. That's what this book is all about. And that's what this autoimmune system article on page 239 is all about. It is the immune system which fights infections, and this is done by triggering defenses against invading bacteria. The antibodies and antitoxins of this immune system recognize the foreign bodies, and they send white blood cells to attack them. And when this immune system is weakened, a person is less able to withstand Epstein-Barr virus, candidiasis, food allergies, arthritis, multiple sclerosis, cancer, and on it goes. Infections occur more easily, and the person is more susceptible to colds, infections, and viruses. Now, we're afraid of viruses, so we rush out and we get a flu shot every year. And I told you what the statistics were. You know, when people have flu shots every year for 10 years, they die more readily. Their immune systems become impaired. And then people that don't get any flu shots at all live longer and have less flu because their immune systems aren't impaired. Every time you get a vaccination, it impairs your immune system. And you've got little children out here and you're impairing their immune systems, you know, with 35 of these vaccines. Not to mention the mercury that's in this, which with the measles, mumps, and rubella, MMR vaccine, is more directly associated with autism. And then when they stopped giving the vaccines in California with the mercury, they said, if you're going to shoot people up, yeah, out here in California, you got to take the mercury out of the vaccine. So they did, and autism is nosediving. It's just going away. I think you're going to find that autism is like this, what they call that, thalidomide, back in 1958. Remember thalidomide? It caused birth defects. And when they got to looking at it, said, well, everybody that gets this thalidomide who's pregnant has a deformed baby. I think you're going to find out that, you know, 5-10 years from now, you'll find the great thimerosal inoculation scandal. You'll find that autism was developed from the mercury toxicity from the vaccines. And when they took the mercury out of the vaccines, autism just disappeared. Just like those thalidomide babies just disappeared when they took thalidomide off the market. Those are called iatrogenic disease, doctor-induced, doctor-caused diseases. Iatrogenic. All right, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll take it up next time. We'll talk a little more here about things like bubonic plague, flu, malaria, smallpox, and how to avoid them. And if you get them, what do you do to cure it? That's what we really want to know. I want to smoke, but when I get lung cancer, how do I cure it? Next time on the Law Hour. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. You can go to our website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.